page 407, On the Problem of Truth by Max Horkheimer, originally published in Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, Volume Roman 4, 1935. Horkheimer's essay is part of a series of critical confrontations with contemporary philosophies and their social implications. In a sense, the article is an exemplary exercise in a critical sociology of knowledge, beginning with the obvious coexistence of rational, irrational human pursuits. This split itself becomes the problem rather than remaining the factual premise, as for most of Horkheimer's contemporaries. The division has grown to the same extent that rational investigation of the world has. The more the world becomes transparent, the more the secure order disappears, and the more the need for secure orders increases. Even, and in fact, especially among the most relentless rationalists, we find the readiness to bracket out and maintain certain areas allegedly inaccessible to reason. The philosophic thought of recent decades, shot through with contradictions, has also been divided on the problem of truth. Two opposing and reconciled views exist side by side in public life and not infrequently in the behavior of the same individual. According to one, cognition never has more than limited validity. This is rooted in objective facts as well as in the norm. Everything and every relation of things changes with time, and thus every judgment as to real situations must lose its truth with time. Page 408. Every particular entity is given to us in time, occupies a definite place in time, and is perceived as lasting to a length of time, and during this time developing changing activities and possibly altering its properties. Thus, all our judgments on the essence, properties, activities, and relations of particular things are necessarily involved with the relationship to time, and every judgment of this sort can only be valid for a certain time. Footnote 1, text. Subjectively, 2. Truth is viewed as necessarily circumscribed. Perception is shaped not only by the object, but by the individual and generic characteristics of human beings. It is particularly this subjective moment to which the modern science of mind has given its attention. Depth psychology seemed to destroy the illusion of absolutely valid truths by pointing out that the function of consciousness only made its appearance together with unconscious psychic processes, while sociology made a philosophically developed discipline out of the doctrine that every idea belongs to an intellectual pattern bound up with a social group, a standpoint. Present-day relativism, in particular, has subjectivist characteristics, but it is by no means the sole representative of this period. Intellectual attitude towards truth. Rather, it is opposed by the impulse to blind faith, to absolute submission, which has always been necessarily linked with relativism as its opposite, and is once again characteristic of the cultural situation today. In philosophy, a new dogmatism has emerged in the wake of the metaphysical reworking of the concept, at first strictly interpreted, of intuition of essences. This development in the history of ideas reflect the historical circumstances that the social totality to which the liberal, democratic, and progressive tendencies of the dominant culture belongs also contained from its beginning their opposite compulsion, change, and the rule of primal nature. By the system's own dynamic, this eventually threatens to wipe out all its positive characteristics. The role of human autonomy in the preservation and renewal of social life is completely subordinated to the efforts to hold together mechanically a dissolving order. The public mind is increasingly dominated by some rigid judgments and a few postulated concepts. The appearance of this contradiction in our time repeats in distorted form a discord which has always permeated the philosophy of the bourgeois era. Its prototype in the history of philosophy is the linkage of Descartes' universal methodical doubts with his devout Catholicism. It extends to the details of his system. It reveals itself not only in the reconciled juxtaposition of faith and contradictory knowledge, but in the theory of cognition itself. Page 409. The doctrine of a solid res cogitans, a self-contained ego independent of the body, which serves as an absolute resolution of the attempt at doubt and its preserved immutable in the metaphysics of Descartes and his idealistic successors, reveals itself as an illusion corresponding to the situation of the bourgeois individual and present before the inquiry rather than based on it. The independent existence of individual souls, the principle which for Descartes makes the world philosophically intelligible, is no easier to reconcile with the criteria in the whole spirit of the analytic geometry which he himself invented than is his proclamation of empty space as the sole physical substance with the theological dogma of transubstantiation. Complete doubt as to the reality of material truth, the constant emphasis in the uncertainty, conditional character, and finiteness of all definite knowledge, immediately next to ostensible insight into external truth, and the fetishization of individual categories and modes of being, this duality permeates the Cartesian philosophy. It finds its classic expression in Kant. The critical method was supposed to perform the task of differentiating the purely conditional and empirical from pure knowledge and reach the conclusion that pure knowledge was possible only in regard to the conditions of the conditional. The system of the necessary subjective conditions of human knowledge is the exclusive goal of transcendental philosophy. To Hume's skepticism, Kant opposes nothing but the sensory and conceptual forms of knowledge and what can be deduced therefrom. But what comes into existence on the basis of these conditions, the theory of our actual world and not merely possible one, knowledge of actual mature and existing human society, lacks for Kant the criteria of genuine truth and is only relative. Everything that we know of reality, of conditions in space and time, relates according to him only to appearances, and of these he claims to have shown that they are not things but only a form of representation, and that they are not qualities inherently belonging to the things in themselves. Footnote 2, text. In regard to knowledge of the world, he is no less a skeptical relativist than the mystical and dreaming idealist whom he combats. In the latest phase of transcendental philosophy, this subjective relativism is clearly formulated. In the last analysis, all being is relative, as opposed to the false ideal of an absolute being and its absolute truth, and is nevertheless relative in some customary sense of the transcendental subjectivity. But this subjectivity alone is in and for itself. Footnote 3, text. Along with the careful and differentiated theoretical philosophy, which did indeed keep thought rooted in the ahistorical sphere of transcendental subjectivity, there are in Kant the postulates of practical reason and linked to them by conclusions which are in part extremely questionable. The transformation into absolute of the existing property relations under prevalent public and private law. Page 410. In the Critique of Practical Reason, which fetishizes the concept or duty, he did not in any way overcome the need for any immovable intellectual foundation, but merely met it in a way more fitting to the time than that of the rationalist ontology of the period. The theoretical philosophy itself assumes that there is absolute knowledge, interdependent of any sensory experience, and indeed that this alone deserves the name of truth. Even the Critique of Pure Reason depends on the assumption that pure concepts and judgments exist a priori in the consciousness, and that metaphysics not only always has been, but that it will of right exist for all eternity. Kant's work embraces in itself the contradiction between the German and English schools of philosophy. The resolution of the contradiction it produces, the mediation between critique and dogmatic system, between a mechanistic concept of science and the doctrine of intelligible freedom, between belief in an internal order and a theory isolated from practice, increasingly and vainly occupied his own thought till the last years of his life. This is the mark of his greatness. Analysis carried through to the end and skeptical distrust of all theory on the one hand and readiness to believe naively in detached fixed principles on the other. These are characteristics of the bourgeois mind. It appears in its most highly developed form in Kant's philosophy. This dual relationship to truth is again mirrored in the failure of the progressive methods of the scholar to influence his attitude toward the most important problems of the time. The combination of notable knowledge in the natural sciences with childlike faith in the Bible, the association of that particularly strict tendency in modern philosophy, positivism, with the crudest superstition has already been noted in this magazine. Footnote 4, text. Auguste Comte not merely laid the groundwork for a whimsical cult, but prided itself on his understanding of the various theories of the beyond. William James turned into mysticism and even mediumism. Footnote 5, text. The brain appears to him not so much to promote as to obstruct the enlightening intuitions which exist ready-made in the transcendental world and come through a telepathic experience as soon as the brain's activity is abnormally reduced. The word influx, used in Swedenborgian circles, describes the phenomenon very well. Footnote 6, text. The pragmatist F.C.S. Schiller, whom James quotes, declares on this point. Page 411. Matter is not that which produces consciousness, but that which limits it and conceives of the body as mechanism for inhibiting consciousness. This inclination to spiritualism can be followed through the later history of positivism. Footnote 7, After Consciousness, text. In Germany, it seems to have reached its ultimate in the philosophy of Hans Driesch, in which a scientism carried to extreme goes together with unconcealed occultism in all questions of this world and the beyond. In this, the occultistic dilemma finds a grotesque expressions in his logic and theory of knowledge through intentional formalism and rigidity.